This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Justices on the state's high court raise a series of questions regarding drop boxes and whether voters can return ballots on someone else's behalf. Plus, a Republican running for attorney general asked the governor to remove five members who serve on the state elections commission. And the governor is making another round of vetoes. We have more on what bills he rejected and those he decided to sign into law. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 15th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., this week we're going to start with the state Supreme Court taking a lot of questions regarding the future of absentee voting, specifically what are the rules going to be around ballot drop boxes and whether or not someone can lawfully take someone else's ballot on their behalf and return it at the local clerk's office. So the state Supreme Court held oral arguments this week regarding the future of drop boxes, like I said, and justices kind of raised a lot of series of hypothetical questions. Mm-hmm. And I thought there were a lot of valid questions, right? Can I give my ballot that's sealed and closed to my child to walk down the driveway and put it in the mailbox? So let's first kind of listen to some of those hypothetical questions that the justices were asking those who were talking to the court. Let's take a listen.
Our reading, Justice Hagedorn, is that in person refers to the deliver or. The deliver the voter or the voter's agent must either mail or deliver in person the ballot to the municipal clerk. And the clerk, the recipient, certainly has discretion to say, bring it directly to me, but just like with an in-person delivery, the recipient can also say, well, put it through the mail slot if
so
I'm not there.
If my local, political party, picks up ballots, picks up my ballot and brings it to the clerk's office, has the ballot been delivered in person to the municipal clerk under your view?
I believe it has been. If the ballot has been sealed and not tampered with, I would say yes.
What does it mean, shall be mailed? Does that mean I can take it down to the mail room? Does that mean that I physically have to walk to the end of my driveway? Does that mean I'm handing it to the mail person directly? Can I stick it outside my house? To send is defined as to cause a letter or package to go or be carried from one person to another. That is a much broader definition than the one you were trying to impose and the one the legislature imposed.
I respectfully disagree because the statute says that this must be mailed by the elector. What the defendants want to argue here is that this means that anybody can do this. The envelope could be given to the local union steward. It could be given to the local Republican Party activist. It could be given to somebody who passes your house on the way and says, "Would you put this in the mail for me?" And that seems to me to be inconsistent with the clearly expressed legislative concern that given the absence of traditional safeguards, we want this to be mailed by the elector.
Now, J.R., this big legal debate in the state Supreme Court comes after a Waukesha County judge ruled mm-hmm. that only the voter can mail their ballot or return it in person at the municipal clerk's office. So I guess it remains to be seen what they'll ultimately rule, but I think what a lot of people are concerned about, especially the advocacy groups, is that those with disabilities, mm-hmm. People with disabilities, excuse me, they really don't know what to do. I mean, there was a woman that I talked to this week from Milwaukee that is paralyzed from the neck down. She said she had to illegally vote because she had to give her ballot to her caregiver to put in the mailbox. So we just going to have to see what's going to mm-hmm. play out for future elections, especially in the battleground state for some big elections coming up.
So the case kind of hinges on what does it mean to mail something?
Right.
Is it you putting in the mail or somebody else putting in the mail? What's it mean in person? Deliver it in person to the clerk and to the clerk. Does that mean in the clerk's office or the clerk on the street? Like if I see the city clerk of Madison, can I go give him my ballot? Mm-hmm. All interesting questions. If the court says what the Waukesha County judge said, which was only the voter can return the ballot, either in person, the clerk, to the clerk's office, or a manned drop box, or via the mail, there will be a federal lawsuit on behalf of those disabilities saying you are preventing me from voting. Now, during oral arguments, Rick Essenberg from Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, the conservative group who filed the lawsuit, argued that those disabilities could actually make arrangements to have the ballot picked up by a postal carrier. I'm not sure how that works, but I can guarantee you, again, if that is the ruling from the court, there will be another lawsuit. The other thing is, Brian Hagedorn got this, the Justice Brian Hagedorn. How do we define lines? What's a line of, okay, you can have a drop box in the clerk's office. Do we have to have a clerk standing over the drop box at all times to watch the ballot be dropped in? Or can it be like on the front door, like a mail slot, the front window, where we're staffed in here, but the ballot box is over? How does that work? What's it mean? And I don't know how they draw the lines. And remember, this court's been fractured on election stuff especially. You have the three liberals, the three conservatives, and Hagedorn, who is a conservative, but also like swings election issues. Where does he fall? Because that's the key of drawing those lines. And I don't know the last word on this issue before November.
And all eyes were on Hagedorn, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I mean, I couldn't really get a sense of where he might be leaning because of where he's swayed in both on election issues. And also, I want to go back to the people with disabilities, too. You know, we heard in oral arguments from Rick Essenberg say, well, yeah, you can sign up for a service that they'll come and grab your ballot. I mean, yes, that is a service, but Disability Rights of Wisconsin said that doesn't mean a mail carrier can come into your home. I mean, some of these people have difficulty getting out of bed, mm-hmm. so they can't have, you know, they can't even answer the door. So it's kind of a messy situation right now, and hopefully it will be clear sooner rather than later so people know what to do with these absentee ballots.
Absolutely.
As we approach the fall elections. Also this week, Attorney General candidate Eric Tooney, who is also the Fond du Lac district attorney, filed a complaint to Governor Tony Evers asking him to remove 5 out of 6 state election commissioners because of how they handled the issue that we've talked about multiple times for not sending special voting deputies into nursing homes during the pandemic. Now, Tooney, like I said, he's a Republican. He's running for office. He maintained that Evers has the power to remove commissioners, but nonpartisan attorneys, I'm sure we talked to the mm-hmm. same ones, JR, they say he can only remove the ones he elected, or excuse me, nominated to the board. And that's only 2. So, Tooney kind of was, during his press conference, said, well, since the legislature is in recess, the governor has the power to do that. But you and I both know the legislature never technically formally is in recess. Yes, they might have their work done for the year. So it was kind of a messy situation. And he got a lot of backlash from his opponent, from Adam Jarko, who's his Republican opponent for AG. He said, while Eric Tooney is out doing political stunts, while Eric Tooney is out doing political stunts and even initiating election prosecutions that he failed to pursue until becoming a candidate, my focus is restoring on keeping our communities safe. He's kind of switching the narrative mm-hmm. to law and order type of things. I also talked to Ann Jacobs, who is the Democratic chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. She basically, you know, also called this a political stunt. She thought this was really pointless because Tony didn't know, quote unquote, the rules on who the governor can and cannot remove. So let's first take a listen from Tony and Ann Jacobs, kind of giving him some criticism for his actions.
What we saw from the Wisconsin Election Commission is they, in fact, went rogue. What they did was illegal. They committed crimes, and they must be held accountable. And also this morning, I hand-delivered a verified complaint to Governor Evers demanding that he remove those board members for cause based on their violations of Wisconsin election law. We've seen elections in the news more often than we'd probably care to see because of various issues that have happened in our elections, laws having not been followed, and we need to make sure the public has faith in our elections, and this is a part of that process.
It's 2022. We're almost 2 years past the decisions that they are purportedly complaining about, which nobody complained about in 2020. He didn't go to his fellow legislators, the Republican Party, and ask them to remove the commissioners. If this is really the case, and he really believes that it's this serious, wouldn't you go to the people who actually appointed us, who do have the authority to remove us from the positions? So what I think about this is that they have nothing to do with elections administration. These are political stunts for political purposes, and we're a convenient excuse to do that.
So, JR, don't really think this will go anywhere. I don't think the governor will really pick up this complaint at all. So we'll kind of see where it goes. But I think, you know, some, as Ann Jacobs pointed out, some Democrats are saying that, well, he was just kind of trying to get in the headlines because he might have a lagging campaign. But, you know, it's still early on. He's got some work to do.
Good point out. Robin Voss has said several times he will not remove Dean Knutson from the commission, even though he believes Knutson broke the law. I called the offices of both minority leaders in the Assembly and the Senate. They both said they have no intention of moving their members of the commission, so they're not going to do it if the governor can't do it. The second piece is he also filed a complaint with the Elections Commission asking him to refer this case basically to the DAs where the commissioners live, and if they won't take it up within 60 days and to basically put it up for grabs to other district attorneys, don't think that'll go very far either. Don't forget, we have three DAs who said they're not going to pursue charges at this point. We have another two we're waiting for to find out for sure what's going on. Two and three. But anyway, we're still waiting, but nobody's bit yet on this whole call. So three DAs have said no charges. So Racine County said no because don't have jurisdiction. Milwaukee County said no on two because there's no crime. Third DA said no because no crime.
It's Green Lake.
Yep. So we have two more waiting for, Sheboygan County, I think, and St. Croix County, or Hudson County, sorry. So St. Croix County, wait on those two, but nothing's happened so far. So I don't think the commission is going to go for this. Plus, you have to get the commission to vote 4-2 at least to recommend going forward. There are five commissioners who they're targeting. I don't think that's math that adds up for having it go anywhere.
Now, what he's claiming to, or I should say maybe the issue that he's pointing out of not sending special voting deputies into nursing homes, the Legislative Audit Bureau did find that WEC did break the law there, but just nothing has been done about it since. So kind of a valid complaint, but not really jumping through the right hoops maybe to take action and holding commissioners responsible. Tooney also made some news this week for his office. You know, low bail, I guess you could say, has been in a lot of the news lately. We're hearing this law and order theme from Republicans as they hit the campaign trail. So Tony's office is facing a lot of criticism after he's being accused of botching a case where a 9-time felon killed a firefighter while he was out on $500 bail. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel broke this story on Monday, I believe. And it was a Wausau man who actually slipped through the cracks because another judge allowed him to legally change his name. So Tooney is kind of saying, well, we didn't catch the error because there was two different names in there and our system didn't catch it. However, Tooney has called out Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm for him to resign for the low cash bail controversy. So Tooney this week was asked about it. He didn't really take responsibility, but he did say, you know, we need laws to make sure this never happens again.
Headline was bad. Story was bad. The key for the campaigns are getting the headlines so they get into an ad. No offense to our profession, but no matter what we write, the more effective tool for getting a message out is going to be an ad campaign because people see it on the air repeatedly, burns it in, versus a one-day story. So I think Jarko's campaign is very happy to have the story out. I wouldn't be surprised if they use it at some point and lead up to the August 9th primary. That's a challenge for Tony. Oh, by the way, Jarko announced again, raising their $100,000 in the latest month. So he's at a fundraising clip monthly that exceeds what Tony was raising in 2021. So it's a challenge for him between the bad headline, maybe kind of not landing a punch on the Elections Commission that he threw, and Adam Jarko raising a good clip of money.
Next thing I want to talk about is a story that I did this week that has been slowly kind of picking up a little bit of news media. It's regarding the licensing delays that is happening at DSPS, which is the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Now, this is leaving applicants that I talk to anywhere from 6 months. I talked to someone who was waiting 2 years just to get their application approved. Now, they can't go into the workforce without these proper credentials. So in a sense, it's hampering the already, you know, struggling workforce right now. Now, even before the pandemic, I talked to DSPS Secretary Dawn Krim, and she said they were struggling with staffing shortages before she ever arrived. They have outdated processing systems dating back to 1997, and they have antiquated paper applications. And, you know, when people hear these themes, JR, it kind of almost reminds you of the whole DWD unemployment backlog that got a lot of attention throughout the pandemic. So basically, when I talked to Dawn Krim, she said, here's the issues. I've asked the legislature for more money. She asked for staffing positions to update their technology. She got some money for the technology upgrades, didn't really get a lot of full-time positions. So this has been going on for a while. And I do want to point out that these investigations are happening in other states, too. There was an article in NPR, NBC picked it up. So it's not just Wisconsin alone, but another agency here that just needs more bodies, needs more people. And lawmakers, I believe on March 16th, it was Representative Shane Sortwell kind of hold an informal hearing about this, trying to shine light on the issue. But as you know, lawmakers are kind of done for the year. So there's not really any solutions that can happen right now. But this could be maybe another target for Republicans to say, look what's going on in this agency, and kind of have that going up into, you know, election season and kind of try to throw it into Governor Evers' face. But we'll see if it lands. I mean, they've made some updates since the backlog. They've improved the application process by removing confusing language on the website. Next month, they're launching this kind of self-guided online application to replace paper forms. So hopefully things will start to improve, but we'll just have to see.
If you could find 9 voters out of 10 that know what DSPS is, I'd be surprised. However, politically, it's a competency issue. You could maybe, if you're a opponent of Tony Evers, lump this in with DWD, handling of the violent protest, and say this guy is not, his administration isn't running government very well. We'll see how they message it. But yeah, I mean, you know, it'd be interesting to watch a transition to the more online system. Also, there's been this constant back and forth between Republican lawmakers and Evers about funding and bodies. The economy is very good right now. It's hard to find state employees because it's a safe job, but also doesn't pay you as well sometimes as being in the private sector. There's a staffing issue for everybody.
Right.
State government's feeling that. And Republicans are going, you have all this ARPA money, you have all this COVID money. You can solve all these problems if you want to. I don't know they can spend it on everything that Republicans think you can spend it on. But there's a constant tension over funding and bodies because Republicans say you have what you need. She'll have to fix this.
All right, and I actually forgot to toss to the video. I talked to Michelle Thomas, who works in Viroqua as a family and marriage therapist. Let's just hear a little bit of about her experience before we move on to the next topic.
In my mind, I thought I wanted to start working in September once all my kids are off to school, and I figured we'll let 3 months seems like ample time to for all that paperwork to get sorted and make sure I have all everything that I need. I try to call at 3 weeks, nobody answers. I try again. I literally have been on hold for 2 hours sometimes, and then I just eventually give up. It was getting to the point where I would literally have to set aside an entire day to be prepared to jump through any hoops that needed to be jumped through. I've taken my phone to the grocery store. I've taken my phone to the park, like being on hold and just letting it play out. The delay is just, it felt like who's slipping through the cracks, you know, during that time, that who really needs help. And these kind of bureaucratic pieces are what's holding everybody up.
Jared, after we ended the show last week, the governor issued multiple vetoes. Kind of the big themes were that he vetoed, no surprise, the Republicans' package of election bills that would really have made sweeping changes to how elections are administered in Wisconsin. I just want to highlight a few that he did veto. Some would prohibit anyone other than the prohibit anyone but the voter to return an absentee ballot. Of course, we highlighted at the beginning of the show that is a case being heard in the state Supreme Court. One would limit someone who can identify as indefinitely confined, banning private money from being spent on elections, quote unquote, the Zuckerbucks, not allow clerks to fill in missing information on absentee ballot envelopes, and giving the legislature more control over election guidance. Now, Governor Evers, in his veto message, said the right to vote is a fundamental to our democracy. It should not be subject to the whim of politicians who do not like the outcome of the election. So, no real surprise there. Some of the other big theme, I thought, from his vetoes, JR, was he rejected a lot of education bills, going from K through 12 education, dealing with charter schools and higher education. Just want to highlight a few of those. The K through 12 schools, some of the bills that were Republican bills that he vetoed would have allowed those with concealed carry permits to have guns on school grounds, allow parents to opt their child out of school mask mandates. There are some proposals there that deal with charter schools. Higher education would have required the UWC system to teach a course on the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. All those vetoes right there. So there could be more vetoes to come, but he kind of set a new record here, JR, of signing and rejecting a lot.
98 bills vetoed this session that eclipsed what Governor Reynolds did in the early 60s. So he set the modern day record. Reference Bureau sent us some information after we wrote about that record pre-1940, because there are Blue Book records. I went back to there. 1862, there were 358 or 85 bills vetoed in 1 year. I'm not sure why. I'm trying to figure that out. But anyway, ways to go for that all-time record, but the modern-day record he has now set. I'm just saying some more. There's still more bills to act upon, so I'm pretty confident he's going to cross triple digits. How far, though, I'm not sure how high he's going to get.
And speaking of records, our next topic leads right into that. Holy smokes, did we get a lot of retirement news this week and just over the past few months. We're going to pull up this slide just to kind of put it into our viewers' perspective of just how many. Right now, the totals are at 9 Dems, 13 Republicans in the Assembly, 3 Dems, and 3 Republicans in the Senate. That equals 28. Now, it's important to note that some of them are deciding to run for other office, but kind of figures we haven't seen in quite some time, JR.
Yeah, so a couple of things. It's a multiple number of reasons why people are retiring. So for some, Sandy Pope and Gary Hebel, they're both north of 70 years old. No offense to those who are north of 70, but I've got better things to do when I'm 70 years old than be in the Capitol. I hope I do at least. they said it was enough. It's been long enough. Sandy, actually, I talked to her, also said that she kind of marks her career in the Capitol of 2 decades as pre-Act 10 and post-Act 10, that pre-Act 10, you could work together and get things done, even though you're in the minority. Post-Act 10, people think that that's the way it's supposed to work. The way that debate played out, the contentiousness, that's how government functions. It's not much fun to be there anymore. Tyler Vorpagel, who is leaving member of leadership in the Assembly GOP caucus, I hear he's probably end up somewhere in trade association world when this is done. Cordy Horlocker from Iguanago, he's going to run for the Waukesha Appeals Court seat, being vacated Marie Lazar, who won that seat in the Appeals Court. So there's that option for him. It's a number of things going on. But big picture, a couple things to note is that the more retirements you have in the Assembly GOP caucus in this environment, the more opportunities you have for a stop-the-steal wing of the party Republican to win a primary and possibly win a safe seat and then possibly cause Robin Voss more heartburn next session. One thing to watch. Also, it is a generational change. I went back and looked at the Act 10 roster of the 4 caucuses. There will be at most one member of the Assembly Democratic Caucus left in the chamber in January who voted on Act 10 from the same seat in spring of 2011. Wow. That's massive change. Now, they're not a lot of politics. Mark Bocan's in Congress now, for example. Joe Parisi's off as Dane County Executive. Corey Mason's a mayor. On down the line. Some have left and gone to Kelda Roy's, for example.
Right.
She was in office in the Assembly in 2011. She left to go run for Congress, then came back with a seat in the Senate. So people have moved chambers. But I'm talking about in the same seat you were in 11 years ago, not many. Over in the Republican caucus, it's fewer than 10. At most, we're still waiting for maps to play out, some other stuff. In the Senate, I think it is 3 Senate Republicans who were in the Senate chamber in 2011. 4 of the 14 Democrats left from the Act 10 debate in the Senate. That is huge, huge turnover. Now, we've seen it before. And we're at 28 right now. There were 29 departures in 2014. Now, I count that as retiring, running from their office, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So again, this term, Rachel Cabral-Guevara running for their office, right? Rodriguez running for lieutenant governor, David Bowen running for lieutenant governor, yeah. Rachel Roth, lieutenant. So people running for other offices, Amy Loudenbeck for Secretary of State, but they're leaving their current seats. It opens a door to a huge turnover. The back-to-back-to-back turnover, we're looking at getting close to 70. That's about as high as I found it going back to 1940. Now, in a single term, from what Reference Bureau could pull up for me, 1942, there were 32 departures. Now, the assembly was 100 people back then, so right. That's one. There's an extra one there. But 42, we were in the middle of a world war. So I don't know for sure that played a part in why people left, but you can figure out, okay, that might be why. Again, now it's different. It's a number of reasons. It's age. It's been around a long time. It's wanting some getting paid a better salary.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense to 55 grand a year. Doesn't go as far as it did 20 years ago. And the salary's not increased dramatically. It's 53 or 54 right now.
Yeah.
Hasn't increased dramatically in the last 20 years. So it's harder to make a living as a lawmaker, especially in a great economy. You go out and find a job paying you more than this pays you for less headaches.
And a lot of them do have other jobs, too. I talked to Representative Sanfilippo this week. I think you did as well, that, you know, he wants to, it's time, he thought. Mm-hmm. He also proposed a bill right before he left dealing with term limits. He thought it was time. And he's also like, I just want to work on my own personal business. I'm ready to transition. He did also cite to both of us that he believes his Republican colleagues are also not doing enough to hold election officials accountable. You know, they pass all these bills. Of course, there's a Democratic governor that's going to veto them. But he really wanted to see more done with that. I also talked to Senator Kathy Bernier, who also kind of cited she's done with, quote unquote, the crazies. I mean, she's done diffusing conspiracy theories. I'm sure when she goes back to her district, she's still going to get that walking down the street. But that has also kind of been another theme that we've seen with some lawmakers citing specific, either not doing enough or I'm tired of trying to convince my colleagues that they think the election can still be decertified. Let's move on to stock picks, JR, because we only got a few minutes left. Sure. This week you got U.S. Senator Ron Johnson with some big bucks.
So he's camping out. Don't have reports yet. They're due by midnight today. Ron Johnson says he raised $7.1 million in 3 months. To put that in perspective, he raised $711,000 in the last 3 months of 2021 before announcing his campaign. Mm. Look, all of last year, I saw these kind of mediocre numbers from Ron Johnson. I was told he has an untapped network of donations that he could just rake in money because he's a lightning rod for criticism, right, about COVID, Hunter Biden, pick your conservative cause. He is out front making remarks that draw attention. If he just turned on the spigot, they said, he'd pull the money. Well, he raised $2.1 million from online donations alone. Now, put that in perspective. Alex Lazary, $3.9 million this quarter. $3.45 million from his own pocket. Sarah Galuski, $2.1 million this quarter. $1.5 million from her own pocket. Mandela Barnes, $1.7 million this quarter. Haven't seen details of how it raised, but he has not been putting money home in the campaign. Two things to think about long term. One, Ron Johnson, great, he's raising this kind of money. It's a big number. It actually is more than a third of what he raised in the entire last cycle in 3 months. So between 11 and 16, he raised 20 point some million, 7 million in 3 months, okay? Once we get past the primary, there'll be plenty of money for everybody because we are one of the 5 to 10 seats that will determine control of the United States Senate.
Correct. Yeah.
So I have no concerns for anybody about what they're gonna have. The Democrats, though, the question is, one, how much deeper can Lazary and Galuski go and put them on their campaign? And two, can Mandela Barnes bank enough cash that if either Lazary or Galuski get momentum, he can blunt it? Now, I don't care if he's broke coming out of the primary again. It's not great, but there'll be resources there. But Lazary and Galuski can write personal checks. So as they're going up on the air, they're moving voters. We don't know Mandela Barnes can do that just yet. When can he go on the air and run an ad? Now, he's better known. He has a reservoir that has a price tag on it from that name ID. But if he loses momentum, what's he going to do to stop those guys? That's something to watch as the next couple of months play on. What can he bank?
And mixed this week, you have Rebecca Clayfish. And just, we got to touch on the GOP field might get bigger. Mm-hmm. And we got a confirmation from Eric Hovde that he will not be getting on the Republican side running for governor.
So Hovde told me he's out, more interested in federal issues. Also had a family health issue with his father-in-law. But his focus really is on federal stuff. He's going to look at running for U.S. Senate in 2024. Okay, he's off the table. But Tim Michaels and Tommy Thompson aren't. And there's this kind of discussion going on in Republican circles about the dynamic between the two of them. Mark Belling, a radio host in Milwaukee, reported there's an agreement between the two that one will get in, one or the other will get in. I don't think that's, my sources are telling me it's a little more nuanced than that. It's that Michaels won't get in if Tommy gets in. And they both know if they both get in, that then it would probably create their chances of beating Rebecca Clayfish. The issue for Clayfish is they're still talking about running somebody else in mid-April.
Yeah.
There is still this kind of undercurrent of, you know, she's not strong enough, she's this, whatever it is. Now, challenges. Tommy Thompson hasn't won a race in Wisconsin since 1998. It's been a long time. He is still well-known, great name ID, but it's been a long time. The base has changed. Tim Michaels ran in 2004 against Russ Feingold. If Michaels gets in, how much will he spend to catch Rebecca Clayfish? She's done the legwork. She's got the networks, the grassroots. She's done all that stuff, going to campaign events for assembly candidates and Senate candidates. How much will he spend to catch her? Because you have to take it away from her. Don't forget Kevin Nicholson's out there, Tim Rantham. It's a fractured field if there's somebody else in. Caveat is Donald Trump. Will Trump endorse one of these guys or Rebecca Clayfish? If you're Michael's backer, you make the argument of, hey, he's the most well-positioned to get the Trump endorsement. So maybe that carries something. Tommy Thompson went down to Mar-a-Lago.
I was just going to say, they all went to Mar-a-Lago.
Dianne Hendricks, who's this mega GOP donor, really wants Tommy Thompson. It looks like she's a fan of the idea of him running. So she talks to Trump. Could that help get a Trump endorsement? We shall see. So there's all that going on, and Rebecca Clayfish is going, okay, you still got to take it from me. I've done the work. But can she prevent one of them if they spend enough, if they get a Trump endorsement, if. And oh, by the way, for Tony Evers, the more contentious this primary is, the worse it goes.
Yeah.
It helps, mm-hmm. even though it's a really, really bad environment for Democrats right now.
All right. And real quick, JR, following this week, PFAS regulations.
Basically, a judge ruled DNR can't regulate PFAS because it has created a list of hazardous materials for its spills list. Unless you put that list together, you can't regulate it. If the DNR puts that list together, Republican lawmakers will almost immediately nix it because they've got concerns about the cost of cleaning up PFAS. So we're in this kind of like difficult situation. The decision was put on hold until I think May or June, allow the DNR and the state to appeal. It's not done yet, but this was a blow to those who want to see the state regulate PFAS.
All right, that will do it this week. Thanks for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Everyone have a happy Easter for those who are celebrating. Take care.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.